Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This is Reasons to be Cheerful with Ed Miliband and Jeff Lloyd.
So Jeff, we're at this big fancy dinner.
Yes.
We're stepping out together.
Yeah.
This is like, you know, it's like when a sort of movie star kind of, you know, becomes official. You know what I mean?
You're seeing yourself as Julia Roberts in Notting Hill with me in the Hugh Grant role.
And the music is striking up at just the right moment.
And your eyes are twinkling.
Yeah.
I've never seen you looking so lovely as you do tonight.
I mean, do you think we'll end up on sort of page 6 of the New York Post as a result of stepping out?
Maybe the Reykjavik Post.
No, the Reykjavik Post, the grapevine.
Yes.
Hello.
Hello.
So what on earth was that we were just listening to?
Well, that was our sort of romantic, you know, Valentine's Day weekend. That was the dinner we were at.
It was.
In Iceland, celebrating the 20th anniversary of the Left Green Party, which is the party of Katrín Jakobsdóttir, who is the Prime Minister. I was invited to their 20th anniversary bash, not to provide any Icelandic singing, but to a sort of seminar about climate change and inequality with a few people from the UK, someone from the Faroe Islands,
and basically Katrín herself. As soon as I heard Ed was going to Iceland, I said, I think we should record a special Icelandic episode. And I basically gatecrashed is what
I did. I'm really glad you came.
So this week, as an excuse for me to go to Iceland, really.
Reasons to be Icelandic.
Exactly. It's a very interesting country. Gender equality, number one in the world.
Yeah, and we looked a lot at that, didn't we? We talked to Katrín Jakobsdóttir, the Prime Minister, about that. We talked to the leader of the trade union movement about that as well, because there was a big women's strike in the 1970s, which in a way sort of set the whole thing off and set Iceland on this path towards gender equality.
And very interesting country in the way that they recovered from the economic crash, because they were really one of the countries that were the most affected. So there's been lots of interesting political movement there in the aftermath of that. Lots of strange political parties springing up.
Yeah, and we'll be talking to one of the people who ended up in government, wasn't he? He was a punk rocker. Now a bookseller, and in between, he was a minister for health.
Yeah, and if you see him, he looks like he runs a hipster club night.
He does.
And he was briefly
even more than I do. Yeah. And we're talking about a really interesting experiment, which in a way we stumbled upon, didn't we? Which was the 6-hour day and shorter working, which we've sort of done a little bit of
on the four-day week
on the podcast before. But we're talking to somebody who's actually doing it in practice, as well as somebody who's in the city council in Reykjavik and encouraging it.
And do you remember last year we talked to Katrín, the Prime Minister of Iceland, on the podcast on the phone?
Yes.
And one of the things that came up was about the...
It was at the end of a very long episode, so some people might not, but it was in our sort of longer days.
It was, but we started talking about the interest or the belief that a lot of Icelandic people have in the mythology and folklore.
The hidden people.
And the hidden people and the elves and the trolls.
Yeah.
So we managed to find somebody to talk about that as well. I mean, it's just all fascinating. We hope you enjoy it. And we got to go out on an excursion.
Oh, fantastic excursion.
It's an incredible country because they were hit so hard after the crash. And basically what has saved their economy is tourism. They're a country of about 370,000 people. And they get over 2 million visitors a year.
Which is extraordinary.
It is. But you can see why. We went out on this excursion. We saw where the continental European plate meets the continental American plate. We saw geysers. You're very proud of a little video you took of geysers.
Honestly, my geyser video got at least 12 likes.
Congratulations.
My children were really impressed by my geyser video.
And we took our first bath together.
Indeed. In the, what do they call them? The
geothermal pools.
Geothermal pools.
It's pretty steamy.
It is pretty steamy.
Because of the geothermal heating and so on. So I thought we could pick one each, a reason to be cheerful from the fantastic trip we took to Iceland. Something we saw, something we learned.
What's yours?
I think mine would be we went to the second largest tomato greenhouse in Iceland.
Yeah.
And I had the greatest tomato soup I've ever tasted. I've always assumed that if I was going to taste the tomato of my life, it would be, I'd go on holiday to Tuscany or somewhere in the summer. Yeah. But I mean, it was something else, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. And they... I'm not sure how environmentally friendly this bit is, but they import bees, don't they?
Yes.
From...
I think they said from Holland.
Yes, they import bees from Holland. And then they said...
For 6 to 8 weeks.
And they said the bees are with us for 6 to 8 weeks. So
and
I was
Ed very sweetly said, so what happens to the bees after the 8 weeks?
They die.
Yeah. Well, it's the circle of life.
It was a slight Santa Claus moment.
Very good tomato soup, though.
Can I tell you my reason to be cheerful, which is that we're driving along in the Icelandic countryside, and there are these quite isolated houses, and Hatla Gunnarsdottir, who was our fantastic person, guide.
The best. I mean, person
she
really after,
she also us, yeah. leads the work on domestic violence in Iceland, but she was incredibly good to us. She pointed out these houses and said, of course, they're owned by the trade unions. And I said, sorry? And she said, well, they're owned by the trade unions and they're basically free to use for members of the trade unions or sort of very low rent. So that, you know, people from whatever part of the population they come from can have a nice holidays in Iceland.
Isn't that great?
Isn't that absolutely fantastic?
Yeah, another reason to be Icelandic.
Absolutely.
Reasons to be cheerful with Ed Miliband and Jeff Lloyd.
Our guide for our stay in Reykjavik is Hatla Gunnarsdottir, who is an advisor to the government and also is showing me and Ed the sights.
I'm in the back seat, of course.
are you complaining about that?
No, I'm okay. Like a child.
Well, speaking of children, you were just telling us an interesting fact about the crash.
Look at that view.
Ed, I'm trying to ask Hatler about the financial crisis and the effect on children. Can you tell us a bit more about
that,
Hatler?
Look at that view, come on, that view.
It is a spectacular view, it's a spectacular city. Everybody should come here.
This is radio, people don't see the view, you know?
Yeah. We were talking just before we switched the microphone on about the financial crisis, and you were saying that had a surprising effect on people.
Yeah, so I think before the crisis, there was a massive boom, and I think a lot of people felt like they were missing out on something because there was so much happening. And interestingly, after the crash, it was reported that children were happier, so they felt better.
So interesting. And have they looked into the reasons why that might be?
No, but I have a lot of theories on it. No, but I think it's kind of hard to analyse reasons why children are better off, especially when it doesn't go hand in hand kind of with the economy. But I think after the crash, there was a lot of like, now we all have to stick together, we're in this together, this is a mess, we have to, you know, go out of it as a nation. I think children had more time with their parents. Partly due to unemployment, which is not great, but also shorter their work hours, so there wasn't the same kind of rush, and we became a community again.
Yeah, I mean, we're not recommending crashes.
I don't know. It was kind of a relief, though. I mean, it was. Everybody sensed there was something mad about it.
Hatley, you're leading work the government's doing on domestic violence at the moment. Now, I guess if we think of Iceland as this gender equal place compared to other countries, it's surprising in a way that would be that much of a problem here.
Yeah, it's really sad that no country has managed to crack the code and eliminate violence against women and girls. But I think in this sense, progress is maybe an open debate about it. And they do this every once in a while. They try to kind of compare rates of violence against women across countries, and it's almost impossible because the more you talk about it, the more women report it, and the more they understand their experiences as a part of like some structural issue. And I mean, I think some of the interesting stuff we're doing here is that we're trying to kind of review the justice system and think about, what does justice mean to women who have been victimised by male violence?
And what do better versions of justice look like?
I mean, are you going to revolutionise the justice system and throw it out and bring in something new, which a lot of feminists would love to do? Or are you going to try to work with the system that we have and make it better? And I think you have to, I think you have to work with it and try to make it better. And then you have some significant changes that at least will enable people to use the justice system and not return from it. Like, no matter what the how the case is concluded, but there's a lot of people who kind of turn from it even a little bit more traumatized than they entered it.
Yeah.
So we're looking into, like, how can we at least ensure that if you take your case forward, that you don't come out of that system feeling worse than you did when you entered it.
I was going to say, we were talking about victims' lawyers last night. I think it sounds like a great idea.
Can you just explain briefly what the victims'
lawyer is? So it's basically, if you want to take your case forward, you get appointed the lawyer who's kind of your right hand throughout the entire process. So the lawyer will advise you on what the process, what's happening. It will help you guarantee your rights in the process. And in the UK, I don't think you have anything like that.
Right.
So here we're looking at strengthening that system. We're looking at giving victims, because victims are witnesses in their own cases, because the case is between kind of the government and the perpetrator. So we're looking at ways to strengthen the victim's status so that they have kind of more ownership in the process, which is really important when you're looking at, especially if you look at sexual violence, where kind of your autonomy is, you know, taken away from you quite suddenly. And then if you have a system that does the same, then just the process through the justice system is unjust. So we're trying to change that. I think we need to go in and you have someone a little bit more important than me.
I don't know about more important, maybe more high profile.
Important in a different way.
So here we are with Katrine Jakobsdottir, the Prime Minister. Prime Minister, thank you so much for welcoming us to Iceland.
Thank you, and you are very welcome. It was a real pleasure to have you here.
I think I could pass as Icelandic.
Yes, you could, you know.
You're red of beard,
red
maybe.
Red beard, yes. It's the Celtic, you know, we are partly Celtic in Iceland, partly Norse, partly Celtic. So, yes, you could pass as an Icelander.
One of your colleagues was showing me this computer program that everybody in Iceland can log on to, where you can look at your family tree going back 1,000 years, and you can see how closely you are related to yourself or Björk or Magnus Magnusson. It's really quite wonderful.
Yes, you know, most of us are quite related, and it's quite uncommon that, you know, we used to say we're all related in the sixth, if you know what I mean. So six
degrees of separation,
yes,
like
six generations.
Yeah.
It takes six generations. Now it's maybe like seven generations, and then we're all related.
And you're celebrating your 20th anniversary of your party, and we were just remarking that there's something sort of unusual happened, which is you've been presented with flowers from lots of the other parties.
Yes,
this is like Labour celebrating an anniversary, and David Cameron and Nick Clegg and...
What, you're saying they never brought you flowers?
They never brought me flowers. That's my
from
big
that rose
beef.
Garden.
That's my big beef with David Cameron.
Yeah, they never brought them. That's
pretty amazing, isn't it?
Well, actually, I think it is very unusual. We got flowers from the Conservatives, the Social Democrats, the Centre Party, the Pirates, the other right-wing party in Iceland, which is called Reform. So,
did anyone not give you flowers?
Yes,
you've got them on a list.
We have a list over them too. So, but it's unusual.
Does that tell us something about the Icelandic political culture? This sort of friendly political culture.
I don't know I don't think you can call it friendly because
right.
it's all also very
confrontational,
a little bit more confrontational than the rest of Scandinavia, I should think, after having, you know, visited all of Scandinavia and watched politics. It reminds me more sometimes of politics in the UK.
Right.
Isn't it the oldest parliament?
It was established in 930, then at Thingvellir, which is not, you know, which was... it's quite a sacred place for Iceland, Þingvellir, because that's where Parliament was founded. But then, of course, we went under the regime of the Norse king, then under the Danish king, and became independent in 1918. And then we had our Parliament.
Well, we're incredibly pleased to be here and very admiring of many of the things that you're doing. I guess the one of the things that we're particularly admiring of, and I think we talked about this last time, is the commitment to gender equality. I mean, just explain for our British audience what the key components of that are, which puts you number one in the World Economic Forum sort of gender equality index.
Yes, probably the reason for us being number one is that every time we see that list, we say, why is that happening? Because we never cease to fight for more gender equality. And we haven't reached the status that we can call Iceland a paradise for gender equality. But we're doing some things right. And I think, I was born in 1976. So the year before that, we had a famous women's strike in Iceland. Women walked out from their workplaces. I think it was around 2 p.m. And they said, we're not getting paid, for more work. So we're just going to leave our offices now. And it was a huge event. Everybody participated. In the years after that, we had a women's party running both for local communities and for parliament. And that changed everything in the other parties. So we have like a 40 years of history of women really campaigning in Iceland, still campaigning for women's rights, making enormous systematic changes that have actually made it possible, for example, for me to be in politics.
You wouldn't have been in politics without the universal childcare and the paid paternity leave and maternity leave, yeah?
I think, yes. I have three sons. I wouldn't have wanted to have to choose between having children and being a politician. And you would have to choose, maybe you could do this if you were a very privileged person with a lot of people you could hire to do this for you, but I'm not. So without universal childcare, and, all my sons have gone to the kindergarten at the age of 18 months or so, and the shared maternity and paternal leave. So me and my husband have actually shared the responsibilities for having those children. I wouldn't be here, definitely not.
And does that leave thing plus the childcare, does that affect culture in the workplace, would you say?
Yes, I think so, because we have a very high participation in the labor market of women. This is one of the things that puts us on top of this list, because it's around the highest in the world. I'm not sure whether we're number one or two there. So, and it's also very good for economy, and it's also very good for workplaces in Iceland to have men and women around the table.
And female leadership.
Yeah, in politics and in many places, but not maybe, and that's the problem. Yes, we have women leading the big banks in Iceland, but not too many CEOs. Both of these banks are owned by the state now, which is maybe a clue, because we don't have many female CEOs.
Are there any quotas in place for executive boards?
Yes, we implemented gender quotas in boards of companies over 25 people, so they have to have women and men around the table. It was heavily opposed and very criticized.
Did that come from your party?
Yes, it came the last time we were in government. It was implemented the last time we were in government.
What proportion is it women?
Well, it has to be 40-60. For either gender. Yeah. Okay. So, but it was heavily opposed. But now, I hear a lot of guys who even opposed it at the time saying, it has really changed everything for the better, because it changes the way we talk. And I think they are seeing the advantages of it. But we still haven't, many CEOs, as I mentioned. So still, we have a fight to win there.
How do you fix that?
I thought, actually, that gender quotas on boards would do something about that. But I think that maybe we will think of some new solutions also to have more CEOs.
What are the next frontiers in the fight for gender equality in Iceland?
Well, the big projects we're taking on now is actually the project on how we can eradicate gender-based violence, gender-based harassment. That's really the big project now. And that's one of the key elements in this government's manifesto, how we can actually do this, because it's not just a judicial project. It's also about education, it's about health, it's about the social system, how we can eradicate this. And this isn't measured, for example, on the World Economic Forum list, gender-based violence. But it's a problem in Iceland, and gender-based harassment is also a problem, as we saw in the Me Too.
I mean, it's interesting that you can have a woman prime minister, women on boards, 50-50 cabinet is women, yes?
Yes, yes.
And still, it doesn't solve these issues.
No, but maybe because this is one of the most deep-rooted inequalities that you can find, because somehow we're all part of this gender system. We're all part of it somehow, being man or woman or somewhere in between. So it's something that we all have to define us, this system. So I think, but of course we're seeing changes, and they are going in the right, moving in the right direction. And, you know, I have three sons, as I mentioned, and they often are like, this is so sexist. So they are very conscious about that, you know, this is a sexist society. And it's maybe it's just because of me, I don't know. I don't think so. They tell me that a lot of the kids their age talk about this at school.
Can we ask you about some of the environmental stuff you were talking about when you were on stage with Ed earlier on, the carbon neutral policy, for example?
Well, I'm very happy about that. That is actually a part of the government's manifesto.
Carbon neutral by 2040, yeah?
Yes, and this was something that nobody had heard about in 2015 in Iceland, when this was actually a proposal from the Left Greens, and everybody were like, carbon neutral? What is that? So I'm, you know, this has progressed really fast. And we have actually now put forward an action plan how we can decrease greenhouse gas emissions and bind more carbon, because we won't succeed in achieving this goal, you know, without doing both. And we can do it, for example, by restoring wetlands, growing more forests. We are actually pumping carbon into the soil, creating rock. We are doing an experiment in that in one of our geothermal plants here close to Reykjavik. So it's something that I sense are really a changed mindset in Iceland when it comes to climate change, that people really want to participate and make a difference.
Do you ever get the sense a country like Iceland can almost be a test kitchen for other countries? So it's a small country, but it's big enough to be able to experiment with things at scale.
Yes, because we're so small, everything can happen quite fast. So
it's not like turning around a supertanker. Your colleague from the Faroe Islands said earlier on, I thought it was quite a good way of putting it. It's a speedboat, not a supertanker.
Yeah, you can really do things very quickly here. And as I mentioned, the manifesto about the carbon neutrality, to sense this feeling that everybody's on board. And we're actually also creating, a scene where all the companies are going to participate, how they can actually become carbon neutral. So it's because we are so small, things happen very fast.
What do you think we learn about political change, for example, on the gender issue? About, you know, you mentioned when you were born, which was around the time of the women's strike, and there's been this transformation.
Mm-hmm.
Is it leadership? Is it going with the grain? Was it the struggle?
I think that it's the fact that it's solidarity. It's not just leadership or individuals. It's solidarity. And you mentioned earlier that we've had visits here from other parties. And one of the things that have made the women's movement in Iceland remarkable is the fact that it has united women from very different parties that don't agree on a lot of things, but agree on some things, and not least when it comes to gender equality.
So cross-party buy-in.
Yeah, that has really happened here when it comes to gender equality. It's the solidarity of women that has made that possible. Of course, you know, individuals are important too, but they wouldn't be there. You know, I wouldn't be here without the solidarity of women that came before me.
And what about the old T word?
Tea?
The trolls.
I think we asked you about the trolls the last time. You denied all knowledge of the elves, the trolls, the little people, the hidden people. And then we pressed you on the issue and you opened up.
You don't have anything like that in the UK?
No.
Elves, trolls?
The Loch Ness Monster is the
trolls are all on Twitter, really, aren't they?
Yes, you asked me whether I had seen the elves or something like that last time.
So if we want
to... Is it elves, not trolls?
I think there's trolls, there's little people, hidden people.
It's everything. We have every sort. It's part of our culture, really. And as you might have seen, I don't know if you've managed to leave Reykjavik, but we have a lot of beautiful stone formations that look a little bit like trolls. And the story goes that the trolls, they travel by night. But if they're outside when the sun rises, they turn to stone.
Ah.
And that's why we have all those rock formations that really look like trolls.
But if we really want to see some, Ed and I need to go out at 3:30 this morning, 4 o'clock this morning, to the countryside.
Trolls. Yes. And okay. They are not very intelligent, the trolls. So that's why...
Well, you've just lost the troll vote.
Yeah.
Yes. I know, but they
there's been a swing away. There's been a swing to the right among the trolls.
Because they have all already turned to rocks because they never seem to remember this thing about the sun, you know. So it's you know, but I really love trolls. I used to study Icelandic literature, and the troll stories, I really love them more than the stories about elves and little people because they are so immensely funny because the trolls are like, they are always like the comic relief.
Well, let's hear it for the trolls.
Yes.
Well, look, Katrine...
I'm trying to get the troll world back.
Exactly. I think you're doing well. Katrine, it's brilliant to have you. Thank you so much for inviting us. Thank you so much for being on the podcast. And good luck.
Thank you, and good luck to you. It's been a pleasure.
Reasons to be Cheerful, a podcast about ideas with Ed Miliband and Jeff Lloyd.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
And to get a perspective on how much progress has been made in Iceland on gender equality, I'm delighted that we are now joined in an anteroom off the conference by Drífa Snídal, who is the president of the Icelandic Labour Association. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
The title of this episode of our podcast is Reasons to be Icelandic. I think maybe the place to start is in 1975, because there was a sort of famous event that happened in 1975, which you were part of at a pretty young age.
I was actually on the demonstration. I was 2 years old, and I was with my father because my mother, of course, had day off from childcare and was demonstrating there with her her friends, and my father went to town with me, and I have a picture published in the paper of me and my father then, 2 years old.
Let's fast forward to today then. Iceland always does extremely well when we look at the international charts for gender equality, but you feel as if there's been some kind of a plateau.
Yes, because we have actually become a bit of a victim of this myth that we are number one of all the lists.
That's why we're here.
Yeah.
We've exactly. fallen victims to the myth.
Yeah, yeah. But if you dive into the index, you see that the reason we are so high in every scale is because we have had these strong leader women. We have had gender balance within the parliament. We have actually had a backlash in that. But if you take, you know, education and health and so on, then we are after our neighboring nations as Scandinavian nations.
Are you still high up compared to non-Nordic nations?
Compared to us?
Yes, we are. We are, but of course...
We're rather behind in the UK.
I can imagine, yes.
I mean, just to be clear, you have universal childcare from 1.5. You have 3 months father's leave and mother's leave and another 3 months to be shared, and that's going up to 12.
Yeah.
And the gender pay gap is how big?
Well, within the municipalities, it's not that big, but within the private market, it's about, 7 to 15%. It's
so less than the UK, but still significant.
Yeah, yeah.
And if you're thinking about the UK, you know, Iceland's ahead of us, but you would like it to go further. What lessons should we learn from the progress that you have made, albeit that you've got to make further progress? In other words, you know, from the age of when you were two, when you went on that march, to today, where, you know, things have moved further ahead. What lessons should we learn?
Public childcare, I think, is number one. I mean, that is the thing that makes women be able to go out on the labor market, participate in politics, etc. And have the big scope, you know, tackling things as is it acceptable that men can buy women's bodies? I mean, that is a fundamental question. And we actually have this law, as in Sweden, that men that buy women are punished, not the other way around. But if I were a British politician, I think I would start with the childcare, because right. that is what have gained us most progress.
And your parental leave system is very interesting, because it is, as I said, men and women both get leave, and it's funded in part by employers and part by government.
Yeah, and we are actually now going forward with a demand of the parental leave going from 9 months to 12 months, and then we want to have 6 plus 6. So the parent who delivers the child gets 6 months, and the other parent gets another 6 months.
And that's use it
total
or lose
equality.
It. And that's use it or lose it. In other words, if the men would have to use the 6 months, they can't transfer it to their partner or wife.
Exactly. And is
that happening? Is that going to happen, that proposal?
Hopefully. We are putting forward that demand. I'm rather optimistic of progress.
Just to be clear, and our British audience will be falling off their chairs at this point, this is paid at 80% of your earnings.
Yes, up to a certain limit.
Up to a certain limit. So that's pretty generous.
Before we let you go, how are things for trolls in the workplace?
Not internet trolls.
I hope they have a decent work environment, as humans have.
You don't feel that you're representing the trolls necessarily.
No,
you're not. Will champion the trolls.
But you don't believe in the trolls.
Well, they have to form their own union, don't they?
The union of trolls.
But what about
maybe
solidarity
that's a job
with
for
the
you.
Trolls? I take it. I'd be the shop steward.
General Secretary
in the trolls union.
Of the trolls union. I think we've found your perfect role.
Yeah, then they can apply to my association, and we will welcome them.
Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
All right, we're going to talk now about what is happening here in Iceland with the hours that people work. And we're going to speak to Elin Sigurdóttir, who is with the Reykjavik City Council, and DJ Margeir.
DJ Margeir.
Okay.
Leave the Icelandic to me, Jeff.
Oh, you're correcting me there.
Yeah, thank exactly.
You. All right, who runs a tech company. So thank you both for joining us. Maybe, Elin, you can start by telling us about how the idea started within the City Council here.
Yeah, we have had a representative of City Council, the Left Greens, since 2006. And we are a feminist movement, so this is been one of our interests for a very long time. So as soon as we came to power, so to speak, in 2014, we joined a majority here in the city. So we wanted to pass to try to make a shorter work week for our workers. So yeah, we started kind of a pilot project together.
So what was it? What was a typical working week prior to that?
We've had a 40-hour working week in Iceland since 1971.
And that's quite a long week by European standards. I think we in the UK work sort of similarly long hours.
And what are you trying to reduce it to?
Our project begin with a 35-hour week, but we also have a few ones doing 37 and 38 hours. So it's a little bit depending on the place.
And what was the reaction like amongst managers when you suggested piloting this?
The kind of way we framed it is that the places themselves had to ask us to join, so there had to be a positive from management and staff, and it was they had to find out how they wanted to implement this in their own workplace. So it was kind of a worker democracy oriented. It was not us telling them how to do it. Now they are telling us how we can do
it. And lots have come forward.
Yeah, yeah.
And what kind of things have you learned through the pilot scheme?
I would never, ever imagine how huge a difference 2 hours a week can make for a person's job satisfaction, less stress and less...
I keep saying this to Jeff, but he just doesn't listen to me, I'm afraid. You know, he's a pretty Victorian employer,
yeah,
Jeff.
Yeah, and all the, you know, the work-life balance. And, of course, it's an issue here. We have a lot of... we have very high work participation among women in Iceland, and they share a majority of the childcare and family responsibilities. So, of course, it's also an equality matter and a feminist issue to have a shorter work week.
And productivity has remained high?
Yeah, it's equal productivity, and they didn't get any extra budget to make the week shorter.
No downside?
Yeah, of course, we are having some troubles in our welfare sector and childcare, where obviously if you're going to do this for a very long time, you're going to need to compensate, because in disabled people's homes, for example, you need to be on a 24-hour watch. So, of course, there's going to be some hiring, but you can do a lot of things with rescheduling work hours and think things through. So that's what we are doing now.
Sounds great.
So DJ Margeir, how was that any better?
We just call him DJ.
DJ.
Because I think you can...
DJ M.
I think your Icelandic is good enough for DJ, isn't it?
So did you hear about the city trying this out and then think that's something we'd like to try at our company?
No, actually not. It was 3 years ago when we started our little experiment. We went actually from 8 hours to 6 hours.
And what type of tech company? What do you do?
We are like a digital agency. We work with design, coding, marketing.
And a typical employee was working 8 hours.
8 hours, yeah. And even more. Honestly, we were facing a little problem. We could see in our people, and when we looked at their posture, their body language, we could see it even in their eyes, that after X amount of work every day, you could see they were gone. They were exhausted. They just switched off. Productivity went down after 6-7 hours a day. So we thought something is wrong. We need to do something. So we thought, and maybe the key question here was, should we measure the quality of our work by the time we spent at the office? Or should we measure it by the quality of our products and services? Of course, the latter is the answer, is the correct answer. So this means we needed to change the culture, and that is never easy, especially when the culture is not aligned with the rules that are set. And we are taught from a very young age, especially here in Iceland, that you need to follow the rules or else you'll be outcast. You need to work hard, work at least 8 hours a day. And if you work longer, you're a hero.
Right.
And you are stronger and et cetera, et cetera. And at the same time, you also need to be a hero at home. You need to be the perfect husband, be present for your kids, families and friends, and the list goes on and on. And this is a puzzle which is really hard to solve. So we thought, instead of like do like the normal company in the stock exchange does, like the priorities are number one, profit, number two, customers, and number three, employees, why not try to think a little bit differently and change the priorities? My company is based upon selling labor by the hour. So if you do just a basic math, this will mean that if we work less...
Less hours to sell.
We have less hours to sell, and that will affect our revenue. But, and here's...
I want to know the result now.
I'm bated breath.
This is like a Nordic noir. I want to know what happens in the end. Did it work?
This is where it gets super interesting. Because in our business, we have like a few basic KPIs. Number one is productivity.
Key performance indicators.
Yeah. And the increase during our experiment, which lasted for 2 years, was 23%. Even though we put in less hours.
Wow.
This is a great number. And this is a lot. And in our business, this is a number which is very easy to measure, as we normally sell, like I said before, the labor by the hour. The reason, I think, is because we show up at work with better concentration, we are more focused, we are rested without stress, so we perform better than ever.
Morale must be a lot higher. Yeah. Because people feel this is a great place to work.
Exactly, and this is something we measure as well, both during interviews and also anonymously during questionnaires or surveys. But what was also notable was that our employees, they did not call in sick as much as they did before.
Right.
And that number was down by a staggering 44%.
Seriously?
It's amazing.
Amazing, I know. And that is huge in so many ways, because obviously that affects the productivity, that affects our profit. They are present more. They don't stay at home sick. But it also shows us that our employees must feel better and fitter, both mentally and physically than before. So maybe this is probably our most important KPI.
And what about you, as you're the boss of the company? What, are you doing the 6 hours, or are you still doing 15 hours a day?
I try, but...
It's hard.
It's hard, yeah. But, I'm trying.
Are you more stressed as a result of your employees being working less?
No, actually, the company is doing better than ever, so I'm actually more calm than ever.
And can I ask both of you, were you tempted with the other way of doing it, which would be a four-day working week?
We consider that.
I don't think that's a possibility for a municipality, because we have services. We have schools, childcare, service for elderly and disabled persons and everything like that. So for some of our workplaces, that maybe could be a possibility, but not for all of them. And because our workplaces are very unique. So we're trying to strengthen the culture of Eat Plates instead of like making everything the same. And I think that is a little bit unique for a city council, just to think that all of our workplaces are different.
And DJ, you said you thought about the four-day week but decided not.
So you've given up on the pronunciation as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a murder on the dance floor.
You're DJ from now on.
Yeah, we definitely thought about it, but we as well, because we are also a service company, we need to be present on Fridays as well, or which day we would not work. So we decided that at least we start. We try and we see and measure and see how it goes. Now it's been 3 years, and I can tell you for sure that we're not going back. Yeah. And if you think about, if you look at 8 hours workdays, it's not a natural law. Mm. It's just something that it's a 200-year-old idea from a Welshman named Robert Owen, if I remember correctly. He wanted to split the day in three halves, resting, working, and sleeping. It's not a natural law. And if you look even further back, you look at hunter-gatherer societies, and some even still exist, and they have been researched quite a lot. It's quite easy to think that people in those tribes, they don't have enough. People should constantly be on the lookout for food, water, etc., just to keep from starving. But the results from many examples show that it was quite normal for people to only work for only 15 hours a week in those sort of situations.
We'd quite like that, wouldn't we, Jeff?
Definitely. I don't know that it'd be great at either hunting or gathering.
John Maynard Keynes, I think, wrote this pamphlet, The Famous Economist, called Economic Possibilities for Our Grandchildren. And in it was the idea of a 15-hour working day, the 1930s.
Yeah. Because this leads to a quite important question. So what's the point of all this creation of wealth if it doesn't make you happier?
Mm. Yeah.
I think we're converted, aren't we?
Definitely.
Don't you think?
Yet more reasons to be Icelandic.
DJ, as you shall now be known.
And Eileen.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thanks, Eileen.
Thank you.
And I'm delighted to say, in our search for the hidden people, we're now joined by Christian Schramm, who
who is Associate Professor in Folkloric Studies at the University of Iceland.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Let's start, because we first got interested in the hidden people when we were talking to your Prime Minister a few months ago, actually. Tell us about the myth, or maybe it's not a myth, the story of the hidden people in Iceland.
The hidden people, or the elves, appear in both oral and literary traditions in Iceland. They can be traced even further back into the Eddic poetry of the settlers who came to Iceland in the 9th century. They are very common also in our folk tales and legends.
So we're quite interested in sort of how people relate to them in the modern world, because we seem to encounter a lot of seemingly modern people who say, yeah, I wouldn't say I believe in the hidden people and trolls, but, and then dot, dot, dot. And it seems to me that nobody quite wants to outright say, I'm not a believer in the hidden people. What is the relationship of modern Icelanders with these people?
Yes, exactly. We've done research in folkloristics on people's supernatural beliefs in general. And many people are open to the idea of hidden people. They may have stories in their own family about gaining help from an elf lady during birth, or receiving objects, or having gone into an elf hill, or something akin to this. But I think the kind of litmus test is if a hidden woman comes to your dreams and tells you not to build your jacuzzi in the specific spot in the garden, will you heed her terms or not? And I think
what would most Icelanders say about that?
I think we'd probably move it a meter or two,
just in case.
Sure, why not?
You've had a long-standing interest in the hidden people.
Yeah, I've been interested in the hidden people for years, for 15 years or so. And it's about the relationship between the humans and the hidden people, and how do you keep that in balance or harmony? And I guess in some ways that's a metaphor of the relationship between people and nature, right?
I think there's a lot of truth to that. That it's about, in some ways, respect of the power of nature to treat others the way you want to be treated yourself, and to have some sort of honor in your relationship with your environment.
They don't want you to move stones is a big thing with the hidden people, right?
Yes, exactly. And even our road services have, to some extent, taken notice of legends and dreams and seers and traditions of certain rocks and hills being populated by elves.
Do you think that explains CRISPR Grayling's behaviour, actually, the hidden people? We have this transport secretary in the UK who's not very popular,
yeah,
and he does some strange things. Maybe it's the hidden
people.
Maybe
those are his motives. He's trying to keep the hidden people happy, Here's in a hypothetical. What if Ed tonight went into a magical area that belongs to the hidden people, and he took a big stone? Maybe he wanted to have some things carved into it. Let's not go into that. But what would they do to him if he removed a stone? How would they punish him?
I don't think you would have much of a political future if you were to do this, and you would definitely have to return them on your next trip here.
Kristin, thank you so much for joining us.
Pleasure to be here.
And joining us now to help us finish off our quest to find cheerfulness and more reasons to be Icelandic, we're joined by Otta Propje. Now, the reason I didn't describe you as one particular thing is you've had quite the career. Can you give us a potted history?
I've been a bookseller for most of my life in one way or another, but my identity is closer to the arts as a punk singer, singer of in punk and rock bands.
What are your bands called?
Ham is my main band. Dr. Spock was one, and Ras, which means bottom, was my punk band. I've taken part in the Eurovision concert in 2014, I think.
Where was that?
In Copenhagen.
Right.
And then I was waylaid into politics after the crash of 2008, and we formed the Best Party.
What is it with Icelandic punk singers and politics? Because there's this guy, John Gunnar, who we've heard of in the UK, who became mayor of Reykjavik.
Mm-hmm.
What is the link?
Well, I was part of his movement. The Bash Party was his brainchild of basically taking politics back away from the politicians a bit. He used to say the politicians messed up my life with the big crash, so now it's time for me to mess up theirs. So that was sort of the idea.
And his story is he was also a punk singer and a comedian, right?
Mm-hmm, yes.
So was it a bunch of humorists and artists? What was the story?
Yeah, to be able to run, we had to put forth a list of 30 names. And it was basically Jon and the rest of us were friends of his, mostly artists.
Did he ask you first?
We don't know.
And you ended up in the government as Minister of Health.
Yes, then a few years later, I ended up in government because the Bash Party, our group, we were voted in.
Yeah.
We had this awful week of being locked inside the city hall in charge, trying to figure out what to do. And, of course, we...
This is for a coalition government.
We decided that the prudent thing would be to, well, take responsibility for our actions, for having been... voted in and doing things smartly and not maybe as punks. And eventually we were part of forming a real political party called Bright Future. And I ended up in parliament and as a leader, as part of a coalition government for actually a short time.
And how was that experience of being Minister for Health, from punk to Minister of Health? I mean, that is quite a transition.
It's quite a transition. Actually, I think it's very useful to get punks in these situations every once in a while.
Really?
I think so.
Maybe I should become a punk. I should go the other way.
Actually, I think it's very healthy for people to go back and forth. All of these systems are so regulated, they're so big, and they have a tendency of trying to save themselves or perpetuate their existence.
So can you talk to us a little bit about the origins of the Best Party, which came before the party you're in government with? So one of their original pledges was to not honour any of its election pledges.
Yes, we promised to break all our promises. And actually, 4 years later, when we decided not to run again, we were said by some of our opponents that we had actually broken this promise because we hadn't actually broken all of our promises.
Wasn't one of your promises to do with swimming pools?
Yes, it was to have free towels at the swimming pools.
That's a very popular promise.
Actually, yes, very much. And also we promised a polar bear in the local petting zoo. And we won the election, so I think it resonated, but actually nobody was very pissed off that we didn't.
You had cover, but you said you were going to break all your promises.
Exactly. Because this is right after the crash of 2008, where basically trust in the Icelandic society was decimated overnight, and people especially lost a lot of trust in their leaders and in politics. So what we... were thinking, and like I say, our backgrounds was mostly from the arts, was that this was a very dangerous situation, a situation where you could get some sort of demagogues or populist risings. We didn't think we'd end up in City Hall, but we wanted to influence the discussion at least. And it was some of the scariest stuff that I've ever lived through was, becoming a politician. And
scary in what sense? The responsibility or just the way?
Yeah, the responsibility. And
so maybe it made you more sympathetic to politicians?
In many ways, yes. As a punk singer, you might be... people will throw things at you and beat you up or so, but that goes with it. But in politics, you're actually responsible for doing things. You're responsible for knowing what you're doing. Because we decided to be very responsible once we were in there and do our very best, it was a very humbling experience, I think.
And did anybody say to you, oh, you've just become like the other politicians?
Oh, yeah, of course. And right. I felt, especially by the end, once I'd been also in Parliament and been, a professional politician for 8 years, I felt myself that I was becoming something different from what I had been before.
Right.
And that was scary also.
Ottar, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you.
Email us reasons@cheerfulpodcast.com. Follow us on Twitter @cheerfulpodcast or search for our Facebook page, Reasons to be Cheerful Podcast.
Now we're at that point where, sadly, we have to go. And Jeff is heading to the airport. He's a very nervous flyer, so he's...
No, I'm not a nervous flyer. What I am is a punctual person. So he, Ed is one of these people who holds a whole flight. He can't manage his time.
This is the outro.
All right, we've heard enough of that. I've been trying to paint a picture of which I think is a true picture.
Well, I think we all. I just wanted it wasn't all romantic bliss. That's what I'm saying.
Well, they often say a big test of a relationship is if you can survive your first little holiday together.
Yeah, we more or less did until that end bit. Yeah, I was sort of annoyed that you were going so early to the airport and you were going to miss out on the guest, you know.
Whereas I just wanted to catch my train.
You just wanted to get, get away from me.
No, never. Yes, never.
That's what you did.
I loved our trip to Iceland. And if you have a country.
Yeah, if you are the head of a country, big or small, and you think there are reasons to be cheerful, it could be you.
Yes.
Reasons to be...
Yeah, I'm still angling for reasons to be Swedish. I think we could be...
you rang the Swedish embassy and they said they weren't interested.
Yeah, no, I rang... this is a true story. I got in touch with whoever was responsible for promoting Swedish tourism in the UK. And they just sent an email back saying, Dear George, this is not something we're interested in. Which really got my back up.
Your fame travels far and wide.
So I just emailed back, it's Jeff, full stop.
Right, well, look, let's do a particular thanks to Katrin Jacobs.tier and
Hatler Gunnars.tier. It is a handy system in case you forget someone's surname, having the son or dotier at the end of every... Although you've got to know their dad's name.
But isn't it rather patriarchal?
It is a bit patriarchal, yeah.
I don't think you should be defending it.
I don't think you should be slagging off Iceland after they were such gracious hosts.
Well, I don't think it's slagging off, but I think...
Well, that sounded a bit like one to me.
No. Right, let's get to the credits.
Yeah, so Emma Corsham produced our podcast. Gail Lofthouse is our announcer. James Deacon made the idents, and Ed Seed composed the music.
Emily Power did our artwork.
I think her dad is called Jeff. She'd be Emily Jeffson in Iceland.
He's been the geezer, Jeff Jeffson.
He's been a hidden person, Ed Ralphson.
And these have been
Reasons to be Icelandic.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.